Situation in Collin County. When we say we want to kill Whitey, we don't really mean we want to kill Whitey, we do. But when we say we want to kill Whitey...
Well, I must say, to Claire's point, I'm increasingly embarrassed to be a white male these days. And what a...
Unless there is proof of vaccination, everybody should still be wearing masks.
Our patience is wearing thin, and your refusal has cost all of us.
These actions could be the equivalent to a form of domestic terrorism.
Don't get the vaccine, you can't go to the supermarket. Don't have the vaccine, can't go to work.
I'm a black man being terrorized by this fucking Klansman right here. We are terrorized by the Grand Wizard. Y'all got the Grand Wizard living in your goddamn thing.
We'll be right back. I want you to change the world.
Thank you. control des souvenirs. Mes souvenirs. Cette rivière blanche et sonore, mon adolescence. Ces grands arbres, les hommes que j'ai aimés. Ces oiseaux qui volent, au loin, mon père disparaît. Mes souvenirs ne sont plus des souvenirs. Ils sont là, vivants, près de moi. Ils dansent et m'enlacent, chantent et me sourient.
Alright, welcome back. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. Alright. Hope you're doing good. Hope the middle of the week is treating you alright. Hope you're doing well. Yeah. So, I got some new intro there. A little new intro. I borrowed that, just a little borrowing. borrowed that M83 song as it's fucking based and red-pilled or something. Or at least the D-Vive made it that way, so whatever. I don't know if that guy, I don't know if they got the right guy on that one, but if he gets out, or he's not guilty or whatever, I want to get that guy on the show. The guy that made the ban this channel D-Vived videos. He got caught up in the Telegram shit. Talk about a controversial guest. Yeah, I don't know, man. To me, it's just video art. I don't know what else the guy allegedly did or didn't do. I have no idea. But it's fucking crazy awesome good video art as far as I'm concerned. I think it's one of these things where if you do an art form yourself, you know what it's like to do it well. You know what it takes. You know how hard it is. You know, like, what goes into it. So, like, if you're a painter, you know what a good painting is, right? Well, yeah, once you edit some video, you know how that goes, right? Once you have a taste for that, you know what it's all about, and when you see somebody else do it right, you just know what you're seeing, right? Anyway, welcome to the show. I hope you guys are doing well. Some things right away. Bob Davis Matthews. Salute Bob there. There you go. Thank you, Bob. Salute to you, sir. Dick Fuhrer had a message for us that's interesting. He says, you wouldn't believe how hard it is to search for family who were National Socialist, NSDAP, Hitler Youth, SA, Wehrmacht, SS. Jews have biased control of internet and sanitized it for propaganda. When I search for family, all I get is a few anti-NS / Hitler capitalist, Christian Zionist, and communist. I think he means to say videos or content. Well, yeah, yeah, well, my response is that that sucks, and it's wrong. And even if they don't like, Nazis or the NSDAP or whatever, it's still part of history. And at this point, it's 80 years part of history. So, like, you know what I mean? This is not 1954, or, 1955. Okay, so it's not like this happened a decade ago. This is a very long time ago. most of us were not even born then. I think Mike is spitting fire. Oh, shit. God damn. That shit is hot as fuck, ain't it? It's so weird. Like, one day to another, it's the same profile and everything. But it's, why did it get hotter? It don't even make no sense. It don't make no sense. I'm telling you, man. What's going on there? All right, let's see. Do a little tweaking here. A little tweaking. Test. It's a word. It's the exact same profile I used yesterday. It was good yesterday. Testing the mic. I think that's good. All right. That looks good. Mic is popping and shit. Speaking of which, I got some hardcore niggified Trump moment here in a minute. Renata Kate, she also says, quick, take my money before the market crashes. Yeah, I'll say, dude, them Trump tariffs are fucking shit up pretty bad. They are buck-breaking the crypto space right now. Crypto space is howling in pain right now. It's not good. But don't be fooled. Don't be fooled. It depends. As far as I'm concerned, there are two potential outcomes. The first outcome is that we just go into a depression and RIP finance, right? So that's option number one. That's potential number one. Potential number two, that doesn't happen. They pull their fat out of the fire and they bring it back online one way or another. And, you know, it's not that fucked right now. It's just, you know, the markets aren't liking this tariffs thing, okay? So the alternative is that it pulls a 180 and it comes rip-roaring back. Now, I think, in fact, I've bet that that's the direction it's going to go. I even did something that I'm not going to get too specific, but I even did something I really don't like doing, and I swapped some stuff for some crypto, for some Ethereum, which I fucking hate Ethereum. But I traded it from one thing to another thing. A little bit of something for a little something else. Why? If I hate it, why did I acquire it? Well, I think that a lot of these projects, I'd say an enormous amount of these projects, are built on Ethereum. All of this infrastructure stuff, the RWA, real world assets. So like what they're going to do is, like, let's say you have a building. And instead of just getting investors and having shares, what you do is you tokenize that building and you break it up into little tokens, basically, in terms of the ownership. And then people buy it, and then 10,000 people buy one token that represents that much of that ownership of that building, right? So this is a thing that's going to happen. You know, you can like it, not like it. You can call it Jewish or whatever. It doesn't matter. It's going to happen anyway. You know, they might be right. It might be very Jewish, but it is what they're going to do. So a lot of that is still built on Ethereum. And how do I know? Well, BlackRock bought a fuck ton of Ethereum. If old Larry Fink is buying it, that means that that's probably where it's going to go. They don't make guesses at BlackRock. You know what I mean? In fact, they have like some kind of AI thing they call Aladdin, where they use it to predict market trends in advance, right? So that's what they're going to do. That's what they're going to do. That's that. I would say just don't sell nothing. Just don't sell nothing. Yep. Anyway, let's go ahead and push on and inward there. Renata Kate, she said, let's take away for the market crash. Thank you, Renata Kate. Salute to you, Miss Renata Kate. Anonymous Goy, he said, subscribe to NNR for $4 a month for ad-free content and a new shiny badge. Based. So he did it. He gets like what's that called? I don't know what it's called. Is it the Auto Rune? I think it's like where it's like a square turned sideways with a fish tail. It's like a fish facing upward. I think that's an Auto Rune, right? Well, yeah. Yeah, TLDR HODL, right. Just don't sell none of your shit, right? Keep all your shit, right? Just keep all your shit, that's all. There will be a time for selling, that ain't now. That's my whole point. Anyway, Should have just said that. It probably would have saved me 5 minutes there. Yeah, so anyhow, all right. Tonight I want to take a look at this Clinton 12 thing, too. Now, I get it that not everybody loves the time machine thing. I get it that some people find it outright boring. But honestly, I have to say, I think we need to understand and study how we got here. Now, I think that's as true with our political situation now as it is with understanding, like, you know, figures in the white nationalist movement and stuff like this. I say founders. I think these are equally, well, not equally, but they're important, right? It's important to know how did we get to the point where we're at right now. How do we get to the point where we're at where, where's that video? I think I loaded it yet. Triple D's video, right, where this kind of stuff is going on. This white boy here was stabbed repeatedly by Tyrone. I don't know his name. I don't care what his name is. Tyrone stabbed, and we're calling him Tyrone. Good enough. So how do we get to this point? I think we all know what this is like. We all know the consequences. We have to live with the consequences. Odell, not Odell. Okay. Oh, Odell is sewage in Old Bavaria. Odell rune, then. Okay. It's not the sewage rune. That's a good clarification there, Frank. Yeah. It's not the fucking sewage rune. Okay, cool. All right, cool. So, right. It's a fair mistake. Okay. Right. How do we get here? How do we get here? This is important. We're going to take a look at that. There's a bunch of other kind of it's current events-y stuff we're going to take a look at, too. And we'll have a nice, short, nice video. Today we're talking about old Trumpstein here. He's fucking up my crypto. Quit fucking with my crypto, Trump. Fucking my crypto up, dude. He's fucking everybody's crypto up, so what am I saying? Some my crypto. But anyway, you get the idea. There's that. There's that. Let's see what he's doing for a minute. We're not going to spend too much time on Trump, because it's... I don't know, I'm in the Trump thing. It just kind of melts my brain a little bit. It's like I already know everything he's going to do. I know what he's going to say. I know that he should be our friend. He should be on our side, our being white people's side, seeing that white people are who put him in office. So he should be on our side, right? He should be our guy, as we would say, right? Well, do you guys feel like he's our guy? Because I sure as shit don't. And I don't think he is. I think he should be. I think he should be. I think he had an opportunity to be. I think he's what did he call it? Jazz Hands McField called it the greatest waste of a cult of personality in American history. I think it's a great way to describe it. What's up, Doomsayer? How you doing, man? Yeah, I think that's a good way to describe it. Yeah. It's sad. It's sad because he really could be like our guy. He could be actually doing the things we need done, but he's not. And that does anger me. In fact, you know what actually angers me about Trump, really? It's the limited hangout thing. It's that, like, he will do, like, 1% or less than 1%, maybe 1% of 1% of the actual thing that needs to be done. And then he'll be like, it's good. Job done. Job finished. There's the APEC tracker, right? He is the by far and away their biggest sponsee, I guess. Person who has been sponsored. That is a big paycheck, bud. $230 million, $230.5 million. You could probably get a politician to do damn near anything. Well, that's just it, right? I think that I don't think Trump got in just because he's so awesome or just because Biden sucks so bad or any of that stuff, right? I think that he got back in because they wanted him back in. I think that the Biden administration, the way it was set up, the way that they had set themselves up for the past decade has been so incredibly focused on serving black and brown interests over white interests, that when this October 7 and its consequences rolled around, the non-white, or the brown and black, I guess you should say, because Jews are technically not white, and but they were, here's the thing, right? Like, in the super shitlib, like, radical anarchist, communist, left-wing kind of thing, they categorized Jews as white. So even if we don't think so, for shitlibs, I guess they still consider them white. So that was seen as mishandled. That was seen as that they fucked up, that in order to cater to their base, they kind of had to leave the Israel Jews hanging. As in, not give them literally everything they wanted when they wanted it. So this was seen as not acceptable to the worldwide Jewry community. So I think that perhaps out of spite and perhaps out of practicality, they said, all right, we're putting the other guy back in. And they know that they know how much they've sunk into this guy's pockets. They're not confused. If you really want to go conspiratorial on a hardcore level, you could say that they planned all of this out a long time ago. They planned for him to get in, all the ruckus that happened, him to be swapped out with Biden, that to go south. Then they planned the comeback. You can go that way. I tend to avoid that these days. I used to go that conspiratorial, but I honestly just avoid that these days because I can't prove enough of that to lean into it too hard. But I will say that that's not really a theory. I guess you could quibble about some of the details about what categorizes as that, but still, that's an owned politician. So he's not going to betray them. Let's take a look at this, and then I want to show you something about what could be happening if we were not getting fucked up. This is 55 minutes. I thought I'd grab a 5-minute video, and we're not even going to watch all that. Goddamn.
This is a CBS News special report. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Maurice
Good Lord, dude.
President Trump is
things are happening for our country. Please sit down.
It's Liberation Day.
This is Liberation Day.
Woo-woo.
For a long time.
Long time, buddy.
April 2nd, 2025 will forever be remembered as the day American industry was reborn, the day America's destiny was reclaimed, and the day that we began to make America wealthy again.
Well, honestly, I wouldn't mind if that was true. I think the trouble there is how they make America wealthy. Like, America's wealth, unfortunately, is too much based on a credit card. Like, America, like, this is the way I would put it. If you took all of the debt-based wealth out of America, if you just had it be that people could own whatever they could afford, whatever they earned with their paycheck, that's what they could buy. If it was not legally permissible to go borrow a shit ton of money, to have credit cards and mortgages and all this stuff, I think America would look a lot more, probably Mexico-ish, I guess. I don't know. It's very hard to conceptualize, but it would not look as fancy as it does. It would look a lot more down to earth. Maybe even it would be probably desperately ghetto in a lot of places, like just third world nigger. But this is what he did. He has this reciprocal tariffs announcement, right? Where I guess the tariffs that we're going to do are proportional to the tariffs, or supposedly proportional to the tariffs that they're charging us. But not even, really. I mean, if you look at this chart, it says China charges us a 67% tariff, but we're going to charge them 34%. EU charges us 39%. We're going to charge them 20%. Vietnam charges us 90%. We're going to charge them 46%. And down the list it goes. So he's saying, yeah, we're going to do reciprocal tariffs, but basically it's not even going to be as bad as they're charging us. Let me just get to that part. I don't care about all this.
China, first row. China, 67%. That's tariffs charged to the USA, including currency manipulation and trade barriers. So 67%, I think you can, for the most part, see it. Those with good eyes, with bad eyes. We didn't want to bring, it's very windy out here. We didn't want to bring out the big charts because it had no chance of standing. Fortunately, we came armed with a little smaller chart. So it's 67%. So we're going to be charging a discounted reciprocal tariff of 34%. I think In other words, they charge us, we charge them, we charge them less. So how can anybody be upset? They will be, because we never charged anybody anything. But now we're going to charge. European Union, they're very tough, very, very tough traders. You know, you think of European Union, very friendly. They rip us off. It's so sad to see. It's so pathetic. 39%, we're going to charge them 20%. So we're charging them essentially half. Vietnam, great negotiators, great people. They like me, I like them. The problem is they charge us 90%. We're going to charge them 46% tariff. Taiwan, where they took all of our computer chips and semiconductors. We used to be the king, right? We were everything. We had all.
We was the kings.
Now we have almost none of it, except the biggest company is coming in. We're going to end up with almost 40%. Lee Zeldin's working to get their approvals. And it's an amazing company, Mr. Wei, of one of the great companies of the world, actually. They're coming in from Taiwan, and they're going to build one of the biggest plants in the world, maybe the biggest for that. But 64%, we're going to charge them 32%. Japan, very, very tough. Great people. And again, I don't blame the people for doing it. I think they're very smart in doing it. I blame the people that sat right in that Oval Office right over there, right behind the Resolute desk or whichever desk they chose. Japan, 46%. They would charge us 46% and much higher for certain items like cars, you know, little items like cars. 46%, we're charging them 24%. India, very, very tough, very, very tough. The prime minister just left, and he's a great friend of mine, but I said, you're a friend of mine, but you're not treating us right. They charge us 52%. You have to understand, we charge them almost nothing for years and years and decades, and it was only 7 years ago when I came in, we started with China and charged them. We took in hundreds of billions of dollars from China in tariffs. And they understood, honestly. President Xi understood. He said, look, I understand. And the other countries, and they all understand. We're going to have to go through a little tough love, maybe. But they all understand. They're ripping us off, and they understood it.
All right, so that's the idea here. So the international markets are not liking this. There was like a fall, then a rebound, then back down again. It's not doing great. But I do like realistically think that this is indeed a temporary thing. What's going on with the whole tariffs and all that shit? I don't think that that's going to last. I think that it's a, I don't know what you would call it, like sticker shock or something. I think it's an adjustment. So that's what's going to happen with that. I don't know. I don't want to spend too much time on all that. It's just worth mentioning. Well, let's see what would happen if we were not held down. What if we were not, like, the home base of the international usury operation? What if we were like a BRICS country? What if we were not having to account for all this juicery, as Desmonds puts it? This is what's going on in China. I don't know about you, but I want my own flying car. I've always wanted a flying car. Don't you want a flying car? I think I want a flying car. I don't know if it should be made out of, like, you know. I don't know if it should be made out of, like, drone blades. My idea was 8. I was still banging, huh? Damn, all right. Let's try that. There we go. Hey. Okay, that's better. I thought I adjusted it already. Okay, here we go. Hey, right, there we go, that's good, all right, that's what it is. Import 55 million low IQ savages that eat up the resources of the productive or flying cars. Tough choices. Freedoming is so hard. No, it's true, and that's what I said on one of the Twitter where I found this. we have spent trillions on this diversity, this racial pluralism thing. How's that going? Is it worth the investment? We could be probably a multi-planetary civilization, but instead, we're paying for nigga shit. We're paying for them to, well, live off us. And especially when you're talking about importing another 50 million or so, whatever it is, low IQ savages from the turd world. Yeah, that's not good. That's obviously not good. And instead of spending it on what could truly bring the country and the people into the future, no, instead they spend it on, you know, handing it over to them, making sure their brown babies are well taken care of. And, of course, you know, they don't really have to work for that, of course. They just sit at home and collect the check. Yeah, gross, man. Gross. I mean, you know how cool it could be? It'd be really cool.
May I go to the clamps?
Right, and that's...
Oh, hang on.
Still the hammer.
Whoa, what a perfect timing. Open up to Antarctica.
Yes.
And let's go in.
Sounds cool, right here. Sunrise. That's probably better. Distribution of labor. And our last call. A little bit cloudy, I think.
Yeah.
Because I cannot see much.
Yeah.
You know what's that? I think we are at about 120 degrees east.
You be very careful with the snows there.
I'm flying north. Probably 15 minutes will be in Australia.
Nice. God, I've just got to move this momentarily.
Oh, there's already so much fog on you. Oh.
There is?
Yes.
Earth is a flat ball.
I've been waiting for this moment all this life.
It's a flat sphere.
I'm very happy for you, John. This is weird. It doesn't have the clip.
162 over Alice? What is that?
Look at it. So beautiful. Oh, wow. Wow. Look at all these features there.
Pretty wild. You can put your feet on the you put your weird fucking watermelon socks on there. Is that a signal to diversity? Watermelon? Bushmaster!
They call it a spacewalk.
Why is this thing still not picking up my FTJ? It's killing me. I'm gonna try to fix this thing. You see what I mean? Like, we could be a much more advanced civilization, but instead we're ending up taking care of our adopted brown babies. I know what you're thinking. I didn't adopt any fucking brown babies. What are you talking about, NNR? Well, you did even if you didn't want to. That's the sick joke of it, right? They adopted them for you and then handed them over to you. Space Nick. Well, you've seen the video, right? What is it? It's Gay Niggers from Space. It's a real movie. It's a real movie. I don't know, man. It looks pretty curvy to me. That's crazy. Gotta tell you, it would be kind of cool to go up there, wouldn't it? Like, it'd be kind of cool to be able to, like, go up there, kind of hang out in, like, a viewing deck for a while and then come back down. You know, like a space elevator. That'd be pretty cool. White man's burden indeed, that's right. Bushmaster 6, hey! He just gives us a salute. Stiff arm salute. Bushmaster 6A. And Israel's nowhere on it. That's right, they can stay here, I guess. Or better yet, we can send them up and we'll stay here. I don't care, either way. We'll draw straws for it, right? We'll draw straws for it. That is pretty wild. You gotta admit, that's pretty fucking wild. Too bad space is full of Klingon niggers. Yeah, it probably is. It probably is. There's always a threat somewhere, right? Get out of that. Done. So, Trump. Trump. Well, it looks like he strong-armed another law firm into giving millions in Israel pro bono work to
combat
anti-Semitism. That's pretty wild. Oh. That's a fucking thing, isn't it?
President Trump on Friday proudly announced he had strong-armed another major law firm into giving $100 million in pro bono legal services towards combating anti-Semitism and other causes. From Politico, major law firm strikes preemptive deal with White House. The White House has reached a deal with one of the largest law firms in the world to provide the equivalent of $100 million in free legal work to causes supported by the administration, President Donald Trump announced Friday afternoon. The law firm, Skadden, Arps, Slate, Maher & Flom LLP, will also fund fellowships for law school graduates to work on causes in line with the administration's priorities. The fellows will represent a wide range of political views, including conservative ideals, the president said in a statement. The priority, of course, is combating anti-Semitism. What else?
Here is his screenshot of his social media that nobody uses. Today, President Donald Trump, Skadden, Arps, Slate, Meager, and Flom LLP. Wow, that's quite a... I'm assuming all of those are Jews. I don't know. Announced the following agreement regarding a series of actions to be taken by Skadden. Skadden will provide a total of at least $100 million in pro bono legal services during the Trump administration and beyond to causes that the president and Skadden both support. In relation to the following areas, assisting veterans and public servants, including members of the military, law enforcement, first responders, federal and state and local government officials, ensuring fairness in our judicial system or justice system, and of course, combating anti-Semitism. It's so predictable. It just never stops. They've already done a good enough job combating anti-Semitism in the white nationalist streaming sphere. That they sure did. That Project Esther was a bitch. Fucked our shit up all kinds of ways. The low taste mafia. Yep. Anyway, Skadden will change its pro bono policy so that all pro bono moving forward will be done in the firm name. A pro bono committee will be constituted to ensure that pro bonos matter. Pro bono matters are consistent with the objectives of the program, and that pro bono activities represent the full political spectrum. The Skadden Foundation will commit to the mission of providing pro bono legal services to a wide variety of deserving organizations and individuals. Skadden is committed to funding no fewer than 5 Skadden Fellows each year dedicated to to the following projects, including the ones I just read and other types of projects. Law graduates that receive Skadden fellowships will represent a wide range of political views, including conservative. So they'll do both conservative and shitlib. They've got conservative and shitlib right now. That's a... Yeah. There you go. Yeah. Skadden affirms its commitment to merit-based hiring. I don't think we need to... Do we really need to read the rest of this? I think you get the point. I don't think it matters beyond that. Oh, well, that is the rest of it, I guess. All right. Well... Skadden will not deny representation to clients such as members of politically disenfranchised groups. So, are you gonna represent the Nazis then? What about the neo-Nazis? You gonna represent them? Because they're a politically disenfranchised group. Or are you just kidding? You just mean, like, brown people, right? You mean brown people, right? Just brown people. Yeah, okay. All right, well, there you go. That's that. Of course, he's also continuing with some other good stuff. Hey, look. He's just gonna threaten a little war with Iran. It's not a big deal. I don't think he's gonna do the war with Iran thing. I think it's a cudgel. But there's some reason to be sketched about the Iran thing. Like, it's not totally fake and gay. Let me see if I can get my video from the other day. Where's that video? It's in here somewhere. Well, that's not the video. There we go.
This book.
Where did it go?
Holds our birthright. But it is not one taught in our schools by our elected officials. The promised land is not for the Jews.
No, it isn't.
But for the true Israelites. The Caucasians. And you deserve to build that home now. Let me read you from Zechariah chapter 10.
I'm just kidding. That's not the one. That's not the right movie. this is the right one. So this is allegedly an underground military base, or I guess network of little bases and tunnels under Iran. And apparently this is supposed to be stocked with mad missiles. Missiles for days. So apparently they're ready as hell for a war with Israel. The little Satan and the big Satan. We're the big Satan, by the way. What's up, hunters? Holy shit. They're not playing around. Yeah, I was dropping it. After you said it, I was dropping it. So like, it's not completely fake. Like, it might be a thing. Who knows, you know? If you think about it from their position, like, wouldn't you? If you were an Iranian and you're constantly getting threatened by America and Israel all the time, wouldn't you be prepping up? Wouldn't you be getting your stuff ready? I know I would if I was them. Please do support the show if you are able to, and share the link no matter what, because you can do that. That shit ain't cost you nothing. Do that. Do it. All right, let's do it. So this article here, Information Liberation. If you don't know this one, this is a good one. This site. This is a really good one. Anyway, it says Trump threatens war with Iran if no nuclear deal. There will be bombing like they've never seen. Can't be saying that shit if you don't really mean it, dude.
On Iran, the president said he's also considering secondary tariffs if Iran doesn't agree to a nuclear deal. Quote, if they don't make a deal, there will be bombing. And it will be bombing the likes of which they have never seen before.
Oh, that's not good. That's, yeah, you don't just say that kind of shit. Let's see, there's probably another video in here. Okay, yeah. Oh, you got Shlomi? Shlomo Shlomi? I don't know, man. I mean, I think that even Trump's had enough of all Shlomo Shlomi here. Shlomi Shlomo. It's not the one. Where's the one?
I think it's the worst negotiating ploy tactic anybody could imagine.
Right, so you would support
Sheldon.
Negotiations with Iran currently so...
Why is it so low volume?
So long as... They first seized all enrichment.
Well, hold up. I'm gonna turn it up because I can't hear shit. It's about audible.
I think it's the worst negotiating ploy tactic anybody could imagine.
Right, so you would support negotiations with Iran currently so long as they first seized all enrichment of uranium?
No. What do you mean support negotiations? What are we going to negotiate about? What I would say is...
What are we going to negotiate about? Israel gets everything. You get nothing. Shut up. There's no negotiation here.
Listen. You see that desert out there? I want to show you something. See, pick up your cell phone, even at traveling rates. You pick up your cell phone, and what are they called?
Roaming charges.
Roaming charges. You pick up your cell phone and you call somewhere in Nebraska and you say, okay, let it go. So there's an atomic weapon goes over a ballistic missile.
Wait, did he just casually say launch a fucking nuke? Like, oh, you know, there's too much fire damage in the building, so we just said, pull it. Did he just literally pull that same shit, but with nukes? I think he did.
...and goes over ballistic missiles and...
Wait, this is Sheldon Adelson. Now, he's dead, but he was not just a Jew, he was like a mega-Zionist, and his wife, she is still funding the Trump campaign. She funded it to the tune of $100 million, Miriam Adelson. And, of course, that's Rabbi Shmuley Sukowitz next to him. Oof. Big oof. Now, this is like two of the Jewish Jews you can imagine. You got, I mean, I don't even know what Shmuley is. I think Shmuley is like a trap. I think Shmuley is, he's meant to agitate you until you say something you shouldn't say, and then they can shut you down, or worse, they can door kick you if you really say what you're really thinking. I think that's what Shmuley is. He's a, I don't know what you call that. I don't know what the term is for that, but he's like a target that they set up, a trap, basically. Sheldon is a blood Jew. Typically the blood Jew is what happens when they get into power. They're all, you know, meek and oh, we're just these little innocent people. And then when they get in power, they're like murderous, crazed fucking psychopaths. Well, he's not that way through politics so much as through wealth.
Middle of the desert that doesn't hurt a soul. Maybe a couple of rattlesnakes and scorpions or whatever. And then you say, see, the next one is in the middle of Tehran. So we mean business. You want to be wiped out? Go ahead and take a tough position and continue with your nuclear development. You want to be peaceful? You want to be peaceful? Just reverse it all, and we will guarantee you that you can have a nuclear power plant for electricity purposes. Friend,
so. So a tremendous demonstration of American strength, so that they would get the message.
The only thing they understand.
And do you see the current negotiations as a demonstration of weakness?
Absolutely.
Okay, well, I was just going to say that the advice that...
First of all, do you agree with what Sheldon said?
98%.
Is this payback for what he said about your column?
I don't know. Your interpretation. In 1986, Rouhani was caught on tape.
Wow. Yes. Cringing in misfortune, insolent in prosperity. Yes, Voltaire did indeed get it right. You will submit to I will, Glam. Yeah, very, very psychopathic shit here. So there is this, there is these threats coming in. Trump unilaterally threw out an Obama-Iranian nuclear deal during his first term to please GOP mega-donor Sheldon Adelson. On Sunday, threatened to bomb Iran if they don't negotiate a new nuclear deal similar to the one he scrapped.
During a phone interview with NBC News, Trump also threatened embalming and secondary tariffs on Iran if the country did not make a deal with the U.S. to ensure it did not develop a nuclear weapon. If they don't make a deal, Trump said about Iran, then there will be bombing. It will be bombing the likes of which they have never seen before.
Jeez.
Us and Iranian officials aren't talking, Trump said. However, in a statement on Sunday, Iranian President Masoud Pezeshkian said he rejected direct negotiations with the U.S. over its nuclear program. In the country's first response to a letter sent by Trump to the Islamic Republic's supreme leader, while Iran's response rules out the possibility of direct talks between the two sides, it states that the path for indirect negotiations remains open, Pezeshkian said in response. As we have stated before, Iran has never closed the channels of indirect communication, Pezeshkian said. In its response, Iran reaffirmed that it has never shied away from engaging in negotiations, but rather, it has just been the United States' repeated violations of agreements and commitments that have created problems on this path. From anti-war, Trump's threats comes as the U.S. is sending more bombers to the region and pounding Yemen with daily airstrikes. Trump also said the U.S. could hit Iran with secondary tariffs if a deal isn't reached. Trump's threat comes after U.S. intelligence agencies said in their annual threat assessment that there's no evidence Iran is trying to build a nuclear weapon or that Iranian Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei has reversed his 2003 fatwa that banned the production of weapons of mass destruction. Iran recently responded to a letter Trump sent to Khamenei proposing nuclear talks and giving Tehran a two-month deadline to reach a deal. A U.S. official told Axios that the deployment of U.S. B-2 bombers to Diego Garcia was not disconnected from that deadline. If Trump's Israel first rampage continues, then he could be striking Iran in as little as 2 months. Sheldon Adelson is dead, but his dream of greater Israel lives on. Follow information.
That is disturbing. Of course, it's not his dream so much as it's his people's dream. Well, it says Neo-Nazi here. Burn it all down. Well, it says burn it all down. See, this is the Trump we get. This is the Trump that Flood actually wants.
Israel must be wiped off the face of the earth.
See, there's the Trump you get and there's the Trump you want, right? I think that ultimately the real play with this guy is to just run out the demographic clock, basically. You know, as once the boomers go, the white population goes, oof, you know. We'll be like 30%. So speaking of insane Zionists, we get Randy Fine. I wonder what his real name was. I don't think it was just Fine. It's probably Randy Feinstein. Probably was, right? It probably was. I'm sure it was. It had to be. It had to be. It's always a shiny rock or a shiny stone or a shiny coin. Something like that. Bomb, 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 Iran. Now, I remember that. That was like a, did they even make, I think they made a song or something like that. I think I remember that from the neocon Bush era. It's still open. I'll try to search it. I think that was a thing. Let me see. Yeah, so they've been angling to bomb Iran forever. Yeah, there it is.
It's well documented. It's well documented that we have, for quite a long time now, known where the real problem is in the Middle East. And, in fact, the president adequately described it as the axis of evil. I guess my question is, how many times do we have to prove that these people are blowing up people now, never mind if they get a nuclear weapon? When do we send them an airmail message to Tehran?
That old Beach Boys song, Bomb Iran.
That's great. We are drowning in insane Zionists because there's nothing at all that happens to stifle them. They just grow like fucking mushrooms after a rain. Here's another one.
Live from beautiful Tel Aviv.
Beautiful.
Tel Aviv. I want to make sure that if you have a problem with Jews, fuck you. If you got a problem
fuck
with
you
Israel,
too, bud.
Fuck you. If you got a problem with Zionists, fuck you. If you got a problem
fuck you too.
With Israel's right to kick ass and defend itself, fuck you. Fuck you.
Fuck you, Rappaport.
You wrote in on which is probably
the Howard Stone failure.
Fuck your cousin, fuck your uncle, and fuck your parents for raising a dumb, ignorant, Jew-hating piece of shit.
Well, I forgot about that. Johnny Sunshine said that Sheldon Adelson owned the Mandalay Bay Hotel and Casino at the mass casualty event took place in, I think it was 2018. It was, and it was during Trump's first term. I remember I was in a gym when I saw that, actually. It was like, it was weird. I was like, what the fuck is this? It was at a country music concert. So I think that was chosen for a reason, because they knew that the audience was going to be predominantly white. That should be its own meme right there. Jews. So they do a lot of this stuff. I mean, this is like zero optics Jewry right here. Now, if you don't know who this guy is, this is Michael Rappaport. He's like a F-list actor who was famous for going on the Howard Stern show and talking boatloads of shit. Basically a trog that went on to Howard Stern show. He would call in all the time. But just like the trogs of live streaming, he was actually the butt of the joke. They were laughing at him, not with him, but he didn't know it. Find one that shows you the kind of retardation this guy was known for.
Did you go to acting school?
No, I never did.
You didn't do like, you didn't go to...
So yeah, it shows.
How did you learn how to act?
Doing it and watching other actors.
But why would somebody hire you if you never acted?
Audition.
But why would you audition if you don't know how to act?
So I started initially as a stand-up comedian.
Aren't
That's
they all bull?
First. And they all were. I wasn't that great. I was young. I was 19, 20. But I'd get called in for auditions because they liked my personality on stage. But
he
as
is.
Much as I wanted to be
he is the skinhead and high Kyler player,
like, that was my dream. And I worked and I practiced and I practiced and I practiced. The first time I read...
He's a big-time wigger, or I guess jigger in his case, because he's not white. He's a jigger.
A scene, which you call sides when you're auditioning, like I was like, I could do this. Like it was just like a simple, I was like, I can do this. And there was no hesitation, fear. It just made sense to me.
What was your first thing you ever did? I'm trying to, I don't
the
even
The first thing
it.
I ever did was a TV show that was very popular in the 80s and 90s. Called China Beach on ABC.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like 12 lines on
China Beach.
You might as well have won Academy Award. I was over the moon. But it gave me the like, yo, I'm going to do this. Like, I just knew I'm doing this. And then it's just been, it's been history ever since, Bowie.
So how are you going to, how are you going
to. Say it's.
JD, what's going on with you and Rappaport, Michael Rappaport, the actor?
I faced him this past week.
I want to fuck him, and then I want to cook him. Wake up, motherfucker! Wake up, Will Murray! Hit him with the hind! I'm going to ruin him.
And I'm going to fuck his face. Nice. Yes.
Yeah. What do you mean you're going to fuck his face?
I'm saying, like, I'm going to fuck his face during fantasy football.
Oh, so then he started calling you at home, or was he calling you here?
Yeah, he was calling my cell, and he left me a bunch of voicemails because I wouldn't pick it up.
Does it bother you that he...
Remember when Cyanim used to talk about how much he loved Howard Stern? He used to play Howard Stern on his show all the time. Yeah, that wasn't weird. Yeah, nobody knew it was Gatsberg Steinowitz back then. Nobody knew that. Now it all makes sense, don't it? All right. I think you get the idea. It's a very multi-culty kind of alliance there. I think we're done with that little segment. But I just wanted to show you what kind of fucking psycho that guy is. Speaking of psychos, where is this one? Oh, yeah, yeah. So if you're not sure that America has been truly negrified, well, we're going to make sure you know. Because that's our job here, to make sure you know just how negrified America really is. This is a testament to that total negrification.
I'm a real nigga. I'ma fuck a bitch real quick in my slippers. Yo. Bitches on my dick, they gon' dance on my lap. On my and lap. If you talking shit, you
negrification.
Get a bitch slap. Yeah, like a mean bitch, not in the scene. Ooh, 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 ooh. Type of bitch, I don't know about shit. I'ma pull up all black in a new whip, tryna get rich. I'ma have to hit a lick, yo. Bro, think he in a murder case. What? Yeah, bro, nigga, bro, fuck, nigga. I'ma. Cut a nigga off with the switchblade. Later talking shit, we can see bitch made. Diamonds on my neck and it's lemonade. You can see it through the window, Escalade. Cause I'm tryna get paid. Niggas tryna take my money, no way. I'm a real nigga. I'ma fuck a bitch real quick in my slippers. Bitches on my dick, they gon' dance on my lap.
And this is America in like an AI video.
Yeah, I like a mean
totally
bitch.
Totally
negrified. Not bitch. Type of bitch, I don't know about shit. I'ma pull up all black in a new whip. Tryna get rich, I'ma have to hit a lick, yo. Bro, think he in a murder case. What? Yeah, bro, nigga. Bro, fuck, nigga. I'm a grain digger.
That kinda makes sense, though.
Switchblades.
Beating the meat card.
Bitch made. Diamonds on my neck and it's lemonade. You can see it through the window, Escalade. Cause I'm trying to get paid. Niggas trying to take
Jigger,
my money.
BB, that makes
I'm
sense.
A real nigga. I'ma fuck a bitch real quick in my slippers. Bitches on my dick, they gon' dance on my lap. And if you talking shit, you gon' get a bitch slap. Yeah, I like a mean bitch, not in the scene, bitch.
Totally
bitch, I don't know about shit. I'ma pull up all black in a new whip. Tryna get rich, I'ma have to hit a lick, yo.
Damn, he gon' drive me crazy if I let him. She thinks she lit, but bitches still ain't on my level. Every time he hit a lick, I push the gas up on the pedal. Let him hit it, now that nigga feelin' special. Cause I got a small waist, pretty face with a big bang. Look how you hatin' on a bitch and you my mama age. I'm doing great, I'm getting paid, so why would I complain? I get my net and then I'm gone, I ain't got time to hang.
I'm a real nigga. I'ma fuck a bitch real quick in my slippers. Yo. Bitches on my dick, they gon' dance on my lap. On my and lap. If you talkin' shit, you gon' get a bitch slap. Yeah, I like a mean bitch, not in the scene, bitch. Type of bitch, I don't know about shit. I'ma pull up all black in a new whip. Tryna get rich, I'ma have to hit a lick, yo.
Holy. Negrified. Like, anybody that thinks this is appealing, they got you, dude. They got you. This is why William Pierce used to fucking, like, go off about MTV all the time. Because this is the result. People that think this is, like, cool. But really what it is grimy, Africanized griminess. It's fucking gross. I mean, the AI kind of thing is funny, but like the this is an appealing, well, anything is sad. It's really sad. Let's see if I can fix something really quick here. Right. So, yeah, this is the trouble. This is what makes I do too, Johnny. I do too. I hate the like drugged out low IQ shit. Sorry, Wild and Skew. I think Lotica mistaked you for a low taste mafia. I asked them to unban you though, so sorry about that, man. You caught the friendly fire there. But anyway, yeah. So the trouble with Trump. It's like we get a little bit of what we want. And not just hot fucking TV hosts. No. We get a little bit of what we want. But it's like just enough to make people think something's being done. I think it fixed it. Okay, here we go. I see it now. You're back, Wild. Right. So this is about the military being put on the border. Now, this is great. This is what should happen. The problem is it's going to have to happen at like 100 times the scale of what it is happening at, right? That's where my gripe with Trump AL is. It's not enough to put a few units down there and be like, ha, we got military on the border. See, we're doing the thing. No. We need full fucking military deployment. We need to seal this motherfucker up. I want this border shut tighter than a... So say something dirty. I want this border shut tight as can be. I want this thing not even a little crack open. I want this thing sealed shut. But watch, they're going to brag about how they moved the military down to the border here. But it's not nearly enough military. It's like a little touch of a military, but not a whole lot of military like we need. We need like the whole, like, if this is not what the military is for, what even is the argument exactly? Like, the military is for what? Like, just expansionist Jewish fucking wars and interventions like that? Because that's the only other thing it does. It's supposed to protect this country here. If you can just have an invasion of 11 million people plus in 4 years... And you don't think that's like the time to use the military to shut that shit down? You don't really have an argument for the military, do you? It is entirely appropriate that the U.S. military be called up to shut that border down. And yet we've not been able to get it this whole time, have we? Let's see what they're going to say they're going to do here, because this is, it's what we need to happen, right? We need this fucking shit dealt with. And my gripe is that he's going to do like 0.5% of what needs to be done. And people are going to be like, wow, holy crap, dude. This is so much. Wow, Trump is so awesome. Problem is, like, you have that other 95% of the problem that's undealt with. Big problem. And somebody said steam valve. Yeah, Johnny Doomsayer said steam valve. Yeah, he is a pressure relief valve. Yeah. It's the white rage pressure was building too high. There was all these white nationalist podcasts popping up. There was little groups popping up everywhere. They had to shut that down. They know that if that keeps rolling, eventually that snowball is going to pick up some traction. Eventually that snowball is going to keep rolling. And before they know it, it's 1933 all over again. And that's something they don't want to happen at any cost. In fact, they're willing to do anything to not go out 1933 style. And yeah, they'll do just about anything. So right now, they're doing a little pressure relief valve. And that's what Trump is. And I think also he's both a pressure relief valve and at the same time an attempt to wind down the clock. Because as soon as the boomers die off of old age, guess what? You have a majority black and brown country, mostly brown. Let's see what's going on with this military at the border story. Oh, why is this chick muted? Come back, border hottie.
The job was first started during President Trump's first administration back in 2018 when we deployed more of those U.S. service members as these large migrant caravans were trying to cross into the United States
Serbs in love.
Illegally. But when the threat scaled back, so did the military. But now they're finishing the job.
So the double strand here, the lower portion of the secondary fence.
Stretching for miles along this border fence is layer after layer of concertina wire.
Good. Good. That's what's supposed to happen. Now, here's a thing. That's a start. Now run that 5,000 miles coast to coast. Hell, have some, stretching out into the ocean a little bit. Like, I don't see any reason why you can't have a three-layer fence. One layer. Big spool of this shit stretching for 5,000 fucking miles. Then another layer. Then another layer. The third layer is electrified. Let's seal this motherfucker up tight. I want this thing sealed up like a drum. I don't want it to be like a wind blowing across the desert shouldn't get through this damn fucking border fence, okay? We know they can do it. They can't afford it. Don't ever let them tell you they can't afford it. And think about it is, they'll be like, that's so far to make the, like, razor wire and shit. Like, so what, dude? Invent like a machine. You know, like a, what do you call that on a farm when you, like a harvester. Invent like a harvester that just unspools fucking razor wire. So you can just drive that along and it's just, razor wire is just spinning off the back of the damn thing behind it. Just do it. Stop making excuses and get it done. Figure it out. Innovate that shit. Come on, let's go. Altered Lord! He says, Hail Show. Hail Show. White power. America is retarded, officially, as confirmed by AI. Damn right, Launcey. Even the AI knows, dude. The AI knows what's up. The AI knows what's going on. These computers even know. Hell on.
Or sea wire.
Think about bramble bush or a thorn bush. If you walk up to, you make a choice. I don't want to deal with it. I don't want to get caught in it.
It's mm-hmm, a clear mm-hmm. message not to cross. And leading the charge is Lieutenant Colonel Tyrone Berrien. He's the commanding officer of Task Force Sapper.
We have teams that are conducting welding.
Put that shit up, dude.
Barbed wire installation and concertina wire installation.
This guy's a fucking Hispanic and he doesn't want them coming.
Marines and sailors have been at it since January, layering 6 miles of wire from the ocean heading east.
That's what we're talking about.
Pedro Rios argues more enforcement sends the wrong message.
Bringing the military on either side, whether it's Mexican National Guard troops or U.S. combat troops, just raises unnecessarily the tensions that could...
Yeah, of course he makes that argument, because having more of his people flood into your country is good for his ethnic interests. Hail Altered Lawn. Altered Lawn doesn't want this. Altered Lawn's like, shut up, dude. Shut up, Beaner. Like, this is America. You have your own Beaner countries. Go back to it. Racist. Yes. Correct. That's very perceptive of you. They're always gonna do this. He's always going to advocate for his own people's numbers. More of them means more power for him. That's all it is. It's that simple, really. In politics, numbers is power. The more of you there are, the more your interests are represented. Straightforward, right? It's pretty obvious. So it just makes sense that somebody like this is going to be advocating for his own people's interests, having more power, having more representation, having more votes. Especially in a democracy, because there's more votes means more of your interest being represented. So it's kind of weird that he even asked this guy. He already know what this guy's going to say before he opens his mouth. Come on.
Provoke some sort of incident that would be detrimental to everyone.
But border officials say these barriers help keep numbers down.
Though our sector accounts for just 3% of the total southwest border, we ended the year with over 324,000 apprehensions.
So far this year, border patrols had 43,000 encounters with people trying to cross illegally, a 70% drop from the same time last year.
San Diego sector is right around about 50 apprehensions a day.
At
a high point, we're averaging about 1,500 to I think a high of about 2,000 a day.
Despite this, agents say the San Diego border is currently the busiest. So for now, the DOD plans to lay down more sea wire to cover the sector.
A lot of the Marines and sailors are happy to be here every day. They are excited because the work they are doing, they see as permanent.
And when we see those numbers drop by land, we usually see those smuggling operations pick up by sea, which can be a very dangerous journey. Now, the Navy announced last week they're deploying another warship to defend the U.S. coastline.
I'm all for more news broadcasters like this chick. I don't even know if she's fully white. She might even be like a little bit, like a little touch Hispanic in there. But she's like a lot more that you know, that Spanish Hispanic than the, like, you know, fucking Guatemalan type. I see Serb would. Then again, I don't know that that means much. Serb would like most women with vaginas. So I don't know if that says all that much. She is hot. She's hot. He's calling dibs. Look, I'll finish bleaching her. I'm all for more hot newscasters. I think it's better. It makes the news more watchable, don't it?
After doing so last Saturday. In San Diego, California, Sarah Alegre, Fox News.
Yeah, I'm for that, too. I prefer 100 feet high by 6 foot thick concrete wall, similar to the Great Wall of China, but with state-of-the-art guard towers every 300 feet spaced apart, with a permanent military base and prison complex, etc. All the money they give other nations, they can make it happen. Oh, yeah, dude. All the money we give to just, like, beaner countries that are allowing the invasion, just take it away from that. It's really simple, actually. Think about it like this. These fucking Hispanic, or let's say mestizo countries. These mestizo countries that are getting all this foreign aid from us, you make it real simple for them. You are going to cut off the flow of invaders. Mexico, Guatemala, El Salvador, all of them. What else they got? This is all the way down to Brazil. Soon enough, we're going to end up with more white nationalist live streamers if we keep letting this shit go on. And it's really simple. You say, look, you're going to stop all this flow of these fucking invaders, or we're going to cut off all foreign aid to you, and we're going to build this massive wall that Dux Fuhrer is describing. I'm for building a wall either way, but in terms of, like, real politique, you could get them to do that. Be like, look, you choose. You can get your money that you shouldn't be getting anyway from us, your aid money, or we'll just keep it, and we'll build the wall with it and keep these fucking invaders out. Pretty easy, right? Pretty straightforward, if you ask me. It's from Northeast Arkansas News. Wow. Northeast Arkansas, hot. So they're really upset because an invader was deported and it wasn't, like, technically the right, I don't know, like, he was technically supposed to be here or something. As far as I'm concerned, no, deporting this guy is not a mistake under any circumstances. Where's the picture of this fucking turd? Where's the turd? Got a picture of him before in the thumbnail or something.
And customs.
Wait a minute. They deported this guy, and they're like, it was a mistake. We didn't mean it. How about no? He wasn't supposed to be here anyway. Where is it? This one is a picture of this fucking guy. Where is he? Really? You're not going to show his picture? Okay, whatever.
...error that resulted in the deportation of an undocumented man to El Salvador. Kilmar Albrego Garcia is being held in a notorious supermax-style prison there, meaning El Salvador, despite a legal order in this country prohibiting his removal. The Justice Department says the court cannot order his return since he's now in Salvadoran custody. Prosecutors claim that Garcia is a gang member, MS-13 gang member, to be precise. His lawyers say that is simply not true.
Well, I can give a fuck if he's in MS-13 or not. He's still not supposed to be here. He's not welcome, wanted, or needed here. He can go there. Enjoy El Salvador. It's not for us to deal with. Like, we're good. We're all good on beaner invaders. Like, we're all tapped out on our beaner invader quota. We're all stocked up. We don't need any more. I don't care if he's in MS-13 or not. If you can prove he's not in MS-13, all right, let him out of the prison, but he's still staying in El Salvador. You should consider that an upgrade from where the fuck he came from. Probably will be an upgrade when Bukele is done with it. Bukele is how you whip these bean countries into shape. I think we need a Bukele to whip Puerto Rico in shape so they can stop shedding their shittiest people onto us. I like these prisons. We need more of those.
Camila Montoya Galvez joins me now. Camila
Montoya Galvez.
Break down what we know about this. Yeah. J.D. Vance, the vice president.
All right, we're letting this go because we got to get to this other thing. So I want to take a look at this Clinton 12 thing. I only got about much time for that. So this Clinton 12 thing, this was where the Supreme Court had issued the order that the schools must be desegregated. This was not a popular decision in 1956. This was not something people wanted in 1956. Not the majority of them, anyway. But it didn't matter. Because we have a critarchy, we're ruled by judges, and guess what? They then went about forcing this integration.
Segregation as to high school students. In that county, desegregation as to high school students in that county should be effective of the present year of 1956.
Well, Clinton was the first public high school that underwent court-ordered desegregation.
That there be them Clinton 12 shit. A lot of people in this community were not feeling it, as you're about to say.
When the Supreme Court decided the 1954 case, Brown v. Board of Education, they knew that there was only so much they could do to make sure integration was being carried out in the South. So they got together the following year in 1955 to determine the responsibilities and timeline for state and local governments involved in the Southern integration process. The court held that it would be the responsibility of the segregated states themselves to create and implement plans to desegregate their public schools with, quote, all deliberate speed. But it would be the responsibility of the lower federal courts to intervene in cases brought against schools who continued to reject African American students. For example, when a lower court...
They weren't even called African-American yet. That was not a thing. They were just called Negroes. Like, literally everybody in the country called them Negroes. I wasn't even, like, a pejorative. It wasn't a slur or anything. It was just what they were called. They're calling them black. Everybody called them Negroes. If you really didn't like them, you called them niggers. But most people just called them Negroes. That was, like, it wasn't even impolite. It was just, like, this is what they were called. Now they act like, I mean, go on black Twitter and refer to them as Negroes. They'll be like, what, she's fucking honky. Y'all come skin-ass honky, I'm a fucking old woman. Shut up. Like, they'll chimp out like that's some kind of deep insult to call them Negroes. Well, so they called themselves, what everybody called them. Now, it wasn't, of course, until the hyphenated American phase and craze when they decided that they were going to start hyphenating all these ethnic and racial identities. And say, now you're European-American, now you're African-American, now you're Chinese-American. That's sad. It shows an acceptance of this dual identity that has to come when you do forced integration. There's no way, because people are not going to drop their racial and ethnic identities just because you're forcing an integration. No, they're going to keep that shit. Are you kidding? So they did. Tar babies? I like tar babies. I like moon crickets. Moon crickets is one of my favorites, too. I like moon crickets. I like, what's the other one? Pickaninnies? Mau Maus? There's a whole big laundry list of, like, ancient slurs that nobody uses anymore. They're quite good to memorize, though, because some of them are so old that, like, You can still get away with it on social media. You could probably call moon crickets on Twitter or whatever and not get banned. Jungle bunnies, yeah. Porch monkeys. There's a whole bunch, dude. There's a whole laundry list of, like, anti-black slurs.
Determined that a particular school's integration procedures were not in keeping with the new legal standard. It was that federal court's responsibility.
That's true. Well, that's true.
To use the most appropriate remedies necessary to successfully desegregate that school, which usually began with a court order for that school to
like
integrate
that
by a specific date.
Moolies.
In fact, throughout the five-year span between 1955 and 1960, federal courts held more than 200 school desegregation hearings and issued numerous court orders requiring segregated schools to admit African Americans by a specified date. The first school to receive such a court order was Clinton High School in Clinton, Tennessee, a town with a population of around 4,000 in 1956, and around...
So it's like authentically a small town in the north side of the South, right? They don't want this. They don't want this. Obviously, integration was bad for whites, obviously. I don't think it was even really good for blacks in a way. I think that it just made it so that... made it so they have to compete with us. I think the worst effect is on us because you can't cause them to speed up enough to catch up with the white students. So instead what you do is you end up slowing down the entire class to accommodate the majority of the black students who are, you know, by definition, average IQ 85. Mudik. That's right, Mudik. There you go. Modern Vikings got the art for it. Modern Viking art. Pickaninny. A pal for your palate. Eat seeds and all. It's crazy to see some of that old advertising they used to have. Man, they used to be real fucking racist. Oh, man. There was there were some real ones. There was even ones like a nigger hair cream and shit like that. That was like legit. I was like a thing. I don't even know if it was like for them or just something they were calling like the hair cream happened to be black. I don't even know. But you can find it. It's like Google like racist, old racist advertising or something. You can find that shit. Pretty hilarious, actually. Pickaninnies, Mau Maus.
10% of which were black. That spring, the school was ordered to begin enrolling black students no later than the fall term of 1956. News about the court order was well known throughout the small town that summer, and the prevailing attitude among the residents was not necessarily in support of integration in general, but at least in support of following the law as it had recently been interpreted by the Supreme Court, and more recently, by lower federal court rulings. Registration Day was held a week prior to the first day of school in Clinton. 12 black students arrived that day, and they enrolled without any issue. Some of these students even reported feeling hopeful that perhaps they would find some level of acceptance at their new
school.
Eat seeds
and all.
At the very least, they no longer had to travel to another town to attend the closest black school, a school that, although public, charged them tuition, while white schools did not. During the week between registration and the first day of school, a man representing a white supremacist organization in Washington, D.C. arrived in Clinton on a mission to prevent integration.
Good.
His name was John Casper.
Casper, let's go! All right, very cool. I'll have to look that guy up. Sounds like a fucking Giga Chad.
The argument simply does not hold that the white race, being a minority, rather being a majority in the United States, should turn over to a group of people only removed from slavery 80 years and only removed from the jungle by a few hundred years. Turn over to them.
Yep. Only removed from the jungle by a few hundred years. Ain't that the truth? That's it. A few hundred years ago, you picked them right out of the jungle of Africa. Well, their fellow Africans did that. And then they sold them to Jewish and Muslim slave traders. So that was cool. Thanks for that, Jews. Thank you. I think it's very great. We love it. It's awesome.
The control of our entire civilization. When I was in Charlottesville, I saw a little piece in the Charlottesville paper which said that integration was a-coming in Tennessee. For the first time, the first school, Clinton High School, it happened to be just a day away. And I wanted to find out how the folks felt about it. I didn't think they were for it, but I didn't tell them anything about that. I just went door to door. I showed them a picture of a nigger soldier kissing some white girl.
Next.
You've probably all seen that picture. Army in the Fort McClellan, Alabama. Some say it's Germany. It doesn't make any difference. There's still niggers in American Army uniforms kissing white girls. Doesn't make any difference whether it's Germany or Alabama. Being done is wrong. Now,
Damn right. It don't matter if it's Germany or Alabama. It's wrong.
Someone in the...
Found a better version.
I showed them the picture, and I asked them if they knew about the niggers going in the school the next day, and they said they knew about it, or they heard something about it, or they didn't hear about it. Some of them hadn't even heard about it. I asked them how they felt about that, and they said, I'm against it. I told them to be down at the school the following day. No, Monday morning. I say integration can be reversed. It can be stopped anywhere, provided an attack is made at every single level. The people keep hitting the judge who made the original ruling. That pressure, tremendous pressure, is brought to bear on that school principal, on the school board, on the local newspaper, or whoever it is that happens to be responsible. It has got to be a pressure down here, which is more or less like a lit stick of dynamite, and you throw it in their lap. Our failure to date has been failing to attack. Failing to attack. Failing to attack at every level and continuously. But we in the White Citizens Council say now, yesterday, today, and forever, as long as there is one living white man in the United States, the Supreme Court is not the law of the land. That decision is not the law of the land now, or it never will be. Never.
Based. Let's actually jump to this one now, because this one is more complete. The judge who ruled this here was named Robert L. Taylor. So that doesn't sound like a tribesman. That sounds like a goy anyway. Taylor issued the order following the Supreme Court's 54 Brown v. Board of Education decision mandating desegregation of public schools. Clinton High School became one of the first public high schools in the South to undergo court-ordered desegregation, leading to the enrollment of the Clinton 12, a group of African-American students who faced intense hostility and violence. Oy vey. Swing low, sweet chariot. That's how you know it's an old-timey video. It's got that crackly. See it now!
Today on See It Now, Clinton and the Law, a study in desegregation, edited and produced by the partnership of Morrow and Friendly, sponsored by Pan American World Airways.
Pan American.
Speaking to you from the control room of Studio 41, here is Edward R. Morrow.
Edward Morrow!
We call this report Clinton and the Law. It does not pretend to be a study of desegregation with all its vast political, social, and economic implications. It is merely the record of one community as written by the people who live there. In other communities, neither the problem nor the solutions may be identical. But the people of Clinton, Tennessee, thought they discovered something of value, and they cooperated with us in presenting and preparing this report for you. This
Jeez.
Is Clinton, Tennessee, Christmas
well, squealing.
Time, 1956.
The Beatles arrive? What the hell's going on here? Oh, just Giga Chad scoring a goal.
Clinton, population 4,000. That's the high school basketball team in action against Lake City. They lost 63-43. Last year they won. Had a good football season this year, in spite of all the recent trouble. Pep band plays Rock Around the Clock, and to all outward appearances, it's just another night in just another Tennessee community. But Main Street has not always been quiet. There have been mobs in the square before the courthouse, and riots that had to be broken up by the National Guard. and a white Baptist minister was beaten up on Broad Street.
Beast. Burning crosses. The light of Christ. That's what that was. I mean, it's weird, though. You know, you'd never know. You'd never know. People today, they have no idea what that's about, really. Like, when they see that stuff, like, they just don't know. They think that it's about something else. You know, it's weird, man. It's weird. We did a whole one on, like, the history of the Klan, and, you know, it comes from the Scottish tradition. That was the fastest way to send communication, send up a signal, a visual signal like that. And from that, they could see that whole, many towns over. Of course, it comes from kuklos, meaning circle.
The violence in Clinton was news all over America and much of the rest of the world. But this is not a report on the National Guard in Clinton, or the tanks in the street, or the tear gas, or the burning crosses, but rather an examination after the fact, filmed in Clinton between December 4, when the Reverend Turner was attacked, and now. It is an attempt by See It Now and the citizens of Clinton to explore the chain of events and emotions which brought violence and shame and hope to this town. All the persons to be heard during this 60-minute report will be citizens of Clinton, with the exception of Judge Robert L. Taylor of Knoxville and John Casper of Washington, both active participants in the conflict. Of the 4,000 people who live in Clinton, more than 3,700 are white, and by tradition and custom, most of them believe in separate schools.
Yeah, buddy! That's right. That's right. And you know what? Most of the country did at that point. Like, most. This idea of integration was not as popular as they would have you believe. Now, it was more popular in the North, obviously, than it was in the South. That's obviously a historical thing, but it's also a matter of exposure, right? There wasn't as much of a Negro population in the North at that point yet. Now, there, of course, was the big migrations following the end of slavery, but there was still, for the people of the North, it was still not uncommon to really not have a lot of interactions with blacks. The Southerners knew. The Southerners had lived with them for the whole time. They knew what they were about. So they were in no hurry to have their kids be occupying the same classroom as little Tyrone and little Shaniqua.
In 1950, Negro parents, backed by the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, brought suit against the Anderson County school system, which administers Clinton High School, asking that their children be admitted. The Courier News, the Clinton Weekly, spoke for the community in support of segregation. Editor Horace Wells.
Well, any newspaper is inclined to follow the thinking of the majority of the people in the community. And this community and I myself have favored segregation all down through the years. Back when this lawsuit was filed in 1950, we did everything we could to maintain segregation by trying to provide the Negro students with good, equal but separate facilities. And that was the way the community felt, and that's the way the community wanted it. And that was the editorial policy of this newspaper.
The federal judge in this section of Tennessee in 1951 and now is Robert L. Taylor of Knoxville.
The Anderson County school case was before my court about 5 years ago.
I'm going to have to find out a little bit more about this judge, because I'll bet you there's something. You know, I don't think he's Jewish. I don't think that's the thing. But I think there's got to be something about this judge that kind of would indicate why he's making these kind of decisions.
At that time, I held that the colored children were not entitled to enter the Clinton High School because they were being furnished equal but separate facilities. At that time, the equal but separate facility. Doctrine was the law.
The Negroes appealed Judge Taylor's decision, and when the Supreme Court decision of May 1954 ruled against segregation, Judge Taylor's ruling was reversed. On January 4, 1956, he ordered Anderson County to comply.
It is the opinion of this court that desegregation as to high school students in that county should be effective by a definite date.
But he is Scots-Irish, like many from East Tennessee. His father, Alfred A. Taylor, was a Republican who served as governor of Tennessee, and his uncle, Robert Love Taylor, his namesake, was a U.S. senator and noted orator. Both were known for their moderate and sometimes populist stances in the region torn by party loyalties after the Civil War. He was a Protestant Christian, Presbyterian. He was a Protestant Christian. Doesn't say which specific type of Protestant. Judges of his generation tended to keep religious views private, especially when serving in roles demanding impartiality.
And that a reasonable date should be fixed as one not later than the beginning of the fall term of the present year of 1956.
Accordingly, on August 20, 1956, approximately 700 students registered for the fall opening without incident. 12 of them were Negroes. Judge Taylor told them all to obey the law, and there seemed to be no questions. Then, another voice was heard in Clinton. John Casper, an outsider...
Casper! K.K. Casper, let's go!
...that the law need not be obeyed.
Our failure today has failing to attack. Failing to attack. Failing to attack at every level and continuously.
Go, Casper.
But we in the White Citizens' Council say now... Yesterday, today, and forever, as long as there is one living white man in the United States, the Supreme Court is not the law of the land. That decision is not the law of the land now, or it never will be. Never.
John Casper first came to Clinton on August 25 and threatened to close up the school if desegregation continued.
Based.
Casper had certain qualities of leadership, and there were those in Clinton willing to be led.
What's that about, Bob? What are you talking about? What are you talking about there? He said he did not want to do it, but had no choice, he thought. Here is the case for the doctrine of the lesser magistrate. I don't really know what that's about, to be honest. Democracy is about the will of the people. Well, it's supposed to be, at least in theory.
103 days later, his boast was fact. An organized campaign of picketing, threats, dynamiting, and rioting had brought Clinton to the brink of anarchy.
Nice.
Casper has been arrested twice, but continues to lead the battle against Judge Taylor's.
There's a sign for you.
The violence was at times as low as...
Go home, Negress.
260.
Go home, coon.
The pressure mounted on an organized campaign of picketing, threats, dynamiting, and rioting had brought Clinton to the brink of anarchy. Casper has been arrested
twice.
Keep
out of CHS.
But continues to lead the battle against Judge Taylor.
There you go. Can't get it to not blur, but...
Continues to lead the battle against Judge Taylor.
There you go. There's a screenshot.
Order. School attendance, shrunk by parents' fear of violence, was at times as low as 260. The pressure mounted on everyone, the faculty, the parents, the student. This is Jerry Shattuck, captain of the football team and an All-State guard, talking to reporter Arthur Morse in the gymnasium.
How did the students react the first day that the Negroes came to class?
Well, I'd like to say something about two or three weeks preceding the time school started.
Yeah.
Our school starts at the 1st of September, and all through the month of August, of course, we knew we would have Negro students in school with us when we started, but no one said too much about it, and no one seemed opposed to it violently. And then I believe it was the Saturday before the Monday that school started, this Casper came into town, and he started calling people up and stopping them on streets and trying to form pickets in front of the school for Monday morning. And then Monday morning when we did come to school, we found that there were, 15 to 20 people out there with pickets. And the students, most of them were out watching and everything, of course, you know, it was something that they'd never seen before. And then when school started and the Negro students were inside, no one was hostile towards them. Everyone seemed to be friendly. All the trouble seemed to be outside the school among the adults and, I'd say six or seven of the students that Casper had persuaded to pick it. Well, of course, you know that things kept adding on top of each other, and pretty soon the National Guard came into town, and of course things quieted down in a hurry then. And then Casper left, and for about a month or a month and a half, everything was quiet. And then this, the local authorities wanted to try Casper on a sedition and inciting a riot, I think it was. And then he came into town for that trial. And then after that, this intimidation within the school that's happened just recently started.
What sort of intimidation was it?
They'd go down the halls and maybe push a Negro student, or I remember they threw some Negro students' books out into the rain one day, and they poured some ink and eggs down into a Negro student's locker. And I think
Boys.
They threw a book at a Negro student in a study hall.
Jerry, how do you personally feel about having Negro classmates?
Well, I didn't ask for integration, and I wasn't enthusiastic about getting it. But the Supreme Court said that our high school should be integrated, and so I thought that I should do all I could to bring this court order about peacefully.
I think, so you can see he's like some kind of, I don't know, athlete there. He does letter jacket, but I think at this time, people were still very, very patriotic, and I think they still believed in the functions of their government, and they thought, well, you know, maybe they know something we don't. Maybe they understand things we don't understand. Maybe they know what's up and we don't. So we're going to have to uphold the rulings. We're just going to have to follow what the leadership says we should do. Of course, that ended not very well. That ended with realities a lot like
God
this.
In his brother's arms, they were twins, identical twins. And his brother was holding on to him, trying to make it stop bleeding. And he died in his brother's arms. And I rushed up there, and I saw him on the gurney. And I could tell, they said he wasn't breathing. I could see all the blood. I saw where the wound was.
Austin, his father shares, was born 2 minutes before his twin brother, Hunter. The two inseparable, as you can imagine. Austin is being remembered as an outstanding student at Memorial High, his football team's MVP, and a young man of faith. His father grappling with loss and forgiveness.
I'm not trying to judge, but what kind of parents did this child have?
African ones.
What was he taught? He brought a knife to a track meet, and he murdered my son by stabbing him in the heart. The guy was in the wrong place. They asked him to move, and he bowed up. This is murder.
Sure is.
I don't know. I know they have someone in custody.
Yeah, we do.
And you know what? I already forgive this person.
None of that. If you want to have some, like, deep Christian forgiveness of this, whatever, then you do that shit privately, sir. We don't want to hear this, like, oh, dude, that sounds like it doesn't even matter. That's what that sounds like. And that sounds like when you say that shit, oh, I forgive this person. When you say that shit, it sounds like it doesn't even mean anything to you that this fucking savage groid just stabbed your son in the heart Because he's like, get out of the way, you're in the fucking way. If you want to have this deep, like, Christian forgiveness shit, you do that privately. We don't want to hear about that. We don't want to fucking hear about that shit.
Already?
Already.
No.
God takes care of things. God's going to take care of me. God's going to take care of my family.
Jesus Christ. I almost wish I didn't play it to the end, because it just makes it so much more shameful. Like, it was bad enough when you're at this point where he's getting stabbed by Mr. Coonboon here in the heart for just standing there. Then you got this guy doing exactly the wrong thing and being like, oh, well, it's okay. Like, I mean, I forgive you. Like, what, are you kidding? Are you fucking kidding, dude? This is why people have really started to have a lot of criticism of Christianity, at least mainstream Christianity, because this is ridiculous. This kind of shit, like, I don't even think this is really what it's supposed to mean with the, like, the kind of forgiveness thing that they're pushing. This is what I don't think it was supposed to mean. I don't think it was supposed to be, like, blind acceptance of evil. This is why people have started to second-guess the entire thing. Especially in the context of this, like, massive, sporadic, one-at-a-time racial war that's gone down. We have these family members up here like, well, I forgive them. It's not even about race. No, it's only about race. Had this fucking animal not been pushed into your child's school, he wouldn't have been running track in your child's school. He would have been running track in his black school. And should he decided to just go on some random fucking stabbing spree, he would have done that to one of his own. Let them pay the price. You don't have to pay the price. But no, you do, because of Judge Taylor.
Thank you. Our football coach put it very well. He said, all through your life, you're going to come up against things that you don't like. But he says you're going to have to accept them anyway and just make the best out of them that you can. And that's the way I feel about it, too. And I think that that's the way most of the students feel.
The 12 colored students who came down every morning from Foley Hill...
Colored!
...also had a lot to get used to.
And then Monday morning... When we started to school, there were only a few people around, and I thought maybe, well, they just here to be curious, and they wanted to see us come in, and that they would leave later. But then, on the next day, when more people came, and the young boys started walking with signs, I began to wonder and think, well, maybe they're not going to accept us like I thought they were. And on Wednesday morning, I almost cried to go back home because there were so many people, and they looked so... mean. They looked like they just wanted to grab us and throw us out. They didn't want us at all. I could just see their hate in their hearts. And when we got inside the school, most of the children were very nice to us. And then there were some, you could tell, that they didn't want us there. They really showed it in a big way. They put signs on lockers and told us to get out. And they threw paper at us. And they shoved us in the halls. And they chalk at us and said all sorts of nasty things. And it just made me feel bad. And I couldn't concentrate at all on my lessons.
But more than on...
Yeah, I'm sure you were doing... I'm sure that was your concern. You were just very concerned with concentrating on your lessons. Yeah, I don't know, though. I mean, in those times, maybe they were a little bit better behaved, like slightly anyway. Could be. You'd be surprised. Like, I think even the Negro students back then were a little bit better behaved. I don't know. Could be wrong. Who knows? Who knows? Anyway, like, what a horrible, horrible situation there. And for what? Now you got, like, Chadley white men getting stabbed in the heart by some random fucking groid, some street nigga. Because he can't, I don't know, like his very fragile black pride was hurt or something. You notice how much that shit happens with these, like, it doesn't even take a lot. It's not like you threatened their mother or something. It's like, you know, he scuffed my Jordans. It's always some stupid, like low intelligence reactionary bullshit like that. And it's totally unnecessary. There's no reason to do that. It's not in any way called for.
going to render a better version here.
Any other individual, the brunt of the...
Not necessarily that they agreed with it, but any person. For myself, the first day and night, my telephone rang incessantly. I guess my life was threatened 10 or 12 times by anonymous telephone callers who would all hang it up. I have since had my phone number changed 4 times to keep from getting these annoying calls.
Wait, who is this Jew?
As principal of Clinton High School, have you yourself suffered any personal harassment since the situation began?
Yes, sir.
All right, for the sake of time, I think we're going to skip ahead a bit here. So I want to skip to our boy, K.K. Casper, the Giga Chat in the story.
Law.
The argument simply does not hold that the white race, being a minority, rather being a majority in the United States, should turn over to a group of people only removed from slavery 80 years and only removed from the jungle by a few hundred years. Turn over to them the control of our entire civilization. The basis of common law is the custom of the people, and if the custom of the people in Anderson County is to keep the races separate, then the Supreme Court law doesn't mean anything. It doesn't.
John Casper on the Ku Klux Klan.
In 11 years, in every southern state, the segregation laws we are fighting for today were written.
Segregation now? Segregation tomorrow?
By the Ku Klux Klan, which saved the South.
Whoa, holy beast. So the Ku Klux Klan saved the South. Wow. You know, I mean, they did hold off a lot of this for a long time. I don't know. Some people think they did more harm than good. Some people think that they did good. Some people think that they're just evil normies. I don't know. I think they get a sort of an unfair shake. You know, they get a one-sided story told about them, much like the NSDAP key people, right? They just get a very one-sided story told about them and told by their enemies. It's like you gave over the narrative to the enemies of this group. So are we going to be surprised that that's the kind of shit they said about them?
And the men who stood face-to-face at Chickamauga, Braxton Bragg and General Thomas, if they didn't have a principle to fight and die for, if they said, well, we'll just let this thing go on, every single one of us here tonight would be mulattoes and not white. Everyone.
Yep.
John Casper on the people of the South.
They underestimated the intelligence and the resistance power of the mountain folk down here in Tennessee and Kentucky.
Mountain folk!
They underestimated that. They thought, well, maybe they were dealing with a group of hillbillies, rednecks, crackers, but those are the real people of the United States. Make no mistake about it. And those hillbillies and crackers, as Billy Branham said, they're the purest white people living on the face of the earth anywhere and the strongest. Among them are men who get on their knees and pray every Sunday, and they pray too. They pray hard. They believe in that Bible, and they believe in Jesus Christ.
Mr. Casper tells of his Clinton adventure.
When I was in Charlottesville, I saw a little piece in the Charlottesville paper which said that integration was a-coming in Tennessee. For the first time, the first school, Clinton High School, it happened to be just a day away. And I wanted to find out how the folks felt about it. I didn't think they were for it, but I didn't tell them anything about that. I just went door to door. I showed them a picture of a nigger soldiers kissing some white girls. Probably all seen that picture. Army in the Fort McClellan, Alabama. Some say it's Germany. It doesn't make any difference. There's still niggers in American Army uniforms kissing white girls. Doesn't make any difference whether it's Germany or Alabama. Being done is wrong. Now, I showed them the picture, and I asked them if they knew about the niggers going in the school the next day, and they said they knew about it, or they heard something about it, or they didn't hear about it. Some of them hadn't even heard about it. I asked them how they felt about that, and they said, I'm against it. What can we do about it? Nothing we can do about it. So I told them something about picketing, how labor unions operate. I told them to be down at the school the following day, on Monday morning, and I would be there with them, and we'd picket, and we'd discuss this thing with the local officials. We'd find out what, if anything, could be done about it.
John Casper on politicians.
What we are trying to do is regain local control of local affairs. And it is local government, local corruption that we must deal with first. You can hardly expect to have a choice between the hollow pumpkin on a pole who's in the White House now and the man who ran against him in the recent election, national election. Two men, both of them dedicated to stupidity and treachery, both of them. Doesn't mean a thing, either one of them. You compare them to the patron saint of the Republican or Democratic parties, Jefferson or Lincoln or any of those people, why, these men are nothing. Our president today. They're just sworn enemies of the American Republic, sworn enemies of the Constitution. Do everything they can in their power to destroy it, and have consistently for 35 years. Each and every one of them.
John Casper on the Supreme Court.
The idea is clear, I think, in everybody's mind, that the right aim of law is to prevent coercion, either by force or by fraud. And the Supreme Court decision is exactly, precisely fraudulent, precisely coercive. But the Supreme Court is in there for life, and the whole federal judiciary is in there for life, and there's nothing you can do about it. And impeachment is silly. I mean, it's so hard to accomplish that it's probably easier to assassinate a man. Supreme Court, we know they're communists. We know that to combine nine men in the Supreme Court don't make one good civil claims judge. But yet, on the other hand, combined, they make one of the most deadly communist, hydra-headed monsters we've ever known. But I'm absolutely confident we're going to destroy that, too. I say integration can be reversed. It can be stopped anywhere, provided an attack is made at every single level, that meetings of the county court are attended, that the constant self-same demands are made, that people keep hitting the judge who made the original ruling, that pressure, tremendous pressure, is brought to bear on that school principal, on the school board, on the local newspaper, or whoever it is that happens to be responsible.
Well, he's right. I mean, as soon as our people forgot to understand that being on the defensive is a losing strategy. When it comes to these issues, we got to zero in on where, when, how the issue's happening, and then we got to attack on it. It's got to be an offensive measure to put a stop to whatever the issue is. If it's going to be a defensive measure, you're going to lose. You're going to lose every time. So they try to legitimize the idea of you doing opposition as a defensive measure because they know you're not going to succeed. They don't really care. But try doing it as an offensive measure and see how fucking mad they get.
There's no sense any longer appealing to Senator so-and-so or President or the Supreme Court judge. It has got to be a pressure down here which is more or less like a lit stick of dynamite, and you throw it in their lap and let them catch it, and then they can do what they want with it. But let them worry about it.
9 o'clock on the morning of December 4, 1956, was conceivably the darkest hour of the worst day in Clinton's history.
Darkest hour.
The Reverend Paul Turner, a Baptist, was beaten up after escorting six Negro youths to school.
Youths.
There were witnesses.
The youths.
It was a horrible thing, and I thought they were actually killing him. Blood was streaming down his face, and even it just looked that blood was running out of his eyes. I asked someone in the group, just anyone, to help him, and when there was no response, I went to him and tried to assist him by pulling some of the men's arms from around his face. And all the time, the men in this group who were standing around were screaming, "Kill him." And that's exactly what I thought they were going to do. I certainly don't consider that it was an act of bravery. It was just a matter of the right or wrong thing to do. And I did what I thought was right. And I'm certainly not ashamed of the fact that I did. It's just that I'm ashamed, really, for the people of Clinton that it did happen in such a nice town where such nice people live.
Reverend Turner is 33 years old, has spent all of his life in Tennessee.
For about 5 days, these Negro students, having, of course, the legal right to attend Clinton High School, had stayed home because of harassment and hindrance and heckling and threats upon their lives and incidents that actually would make anybody scared. I chose to take such a stand on this moral principle, that as long as the law is the law, as it is in our land, and as long as they did personally choose to come to Clinton High School, their legal right, that they had a moral right to attend unheckled and unhindered and unharassed. It was this that prompted me to accompany them. Though there were quite a few hecklers, we made our way to the high school building without any overt incident. When I emerged from the school building about 5 or 10 minutes later, the hecklers were still there and they heckled me personally. About 300 yards away from the high school, we were far away from where the policemen were doing their duty, of course, in front of the high school. One of the Citizens Council members had stationed himself with about three other men on a corner. As I made my way to that corner, they jumped me. I retreated across the street, Broad Street of Clinton, trying to keep him at arm's length, while the other fellows were trying to surround me and to hold my arms and to get me stationary for the beating. I retreated all the way across the street, trying to avoid any incident. Finally found myself pretty well backed up against the Bishop Building on the other side of the street. I knew then that I had to do something. And it was at that time also that one man successfully held my arms down and allowed the number one man of their gang to land a pretty good blow upon my nose. It was at that time also that I realized I had to defend myself in some way, and so I took off after the man who had slugged me, pinned him against a car, and immediately about 8 to 10 people were on our backs. After a while, when the police arrived, everybody scattered pretty much. We came up from our position bending over. I took a hold of the two fellows that led the attack, one in one hand, one in the other, and shoved each of them into the arms of a policeman, and from there they took them on over to the police station. I retreated into a doctor's office.
But everyone did not applaud Reverend Turner's act, which coincidentally occurred on the same day that Clinton was electing a new mayor. James Meredith, a grocer, running for mayor with the backing of the White Citizens Council, was badly defeated. Claims that the Reverend's action may have swung the election to his opponent.
My name's James B. Meredith. I'm operator of the City Food Market in Clinton, Tennessee. I was in this mayor's race here December the 4th, 1956, which I was defeated. Well, about the election, I think there's a lot of misrepresentation. A lot of it started here in this Clinton Courier News, which is a local weekly newspaper here. I've been here a resident of this county around a little better than 20 years. The way he had me represented as if I might have been Jesse James or somebody just come in here on a horse, rode into town and got off, which that was untrue. I've been here on this street for about 20-some years operating a grocery store. They made it out to be segregation against integration. As for me, I'm like 95%, I'd say, of the people here in Anderson County. I am against integration. Of course, we believe Negroes have an equal rights, equal education, and equal facilities, but we think they should have them in their own place. As for being endorsed by the White Citizen Council, as everybody knows, I came out in this race on my own. As my friends came in the store here and encouraged me to run this mayor's race. I was running a good race in this mayor's race up until the morning before the polls opened. This minister, he went up on the hill to bring the niggers down to school, and then a few minutes after that...
There were people fighting this, and there were people fighting it in a quite reasonable way. I mean, people were running for office, people showing up at the city councils. People were doing things, just perhaps not radically enough. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's very easy for us to criticize it in the past tense, but it's very frustrating to see. And I don't know, man. I don't know that these people really understood just how bad this was all going to end up. It's easy for us to understand. It's easy for us to think that they were going to know just how messed up things were going to get. No, I don't believe so. Why doesn't that work? Oh, that's why. Okay. There we go. Just realized something was messed up. I don't think that they knew how fucked up this was all going to get. I don't think they had any idea. It's very easy for us to think, like, oh, they should have known. Well, maybe. But, you know, if you look at the... even if you look at the Negroes then, I mean, they were pretty well behaved compared to the ones we got now. You know? They got a lot more rowdy in the meantime.
That why the scuffle out here started down somewhere in the lower end of town. That was approximately, I'd say, about 10 minutes before the polls opened. As to whether or not that was political, I don't know. My understanding was that niggers wasn't supposed to come to school that morning. But I figure on coming back in either 2 or 4 years from now and winning this mayor's race.
There were other merchants involved, and some were losing customers because they stood by the court order. This is R.G. Krosno, chairman of the school board.
I'm sure there's no doubt in your mind as to my official connection with the dairy company. As president of Norris Premium Incorporated, we too have had threats, boycott of our product in a number of instances. We have lost accounts which we have served 10, 12, 15 years as a result of my being a member of this particular school board. But I would like to assure you as a faculty and my fellow members on the board that if it becomes necessary for me to make a decision as to whether I sell a quart of milk or resign from the school board, I would like to assure you here and now that I will not sell a quart of milk, but will remain a member of this school board.
Also on December 4th, the
hell does that mean?
Was knocked down,
the fuck
and several
does that
white
mean?
And colored children were beaten. The school board asked for federal protection, and at 11:45 closed the high school until order could be restored. Mrs. Eleanor Davis, a mother and a teacher, explains to a PTA group what it was like.
We were stunned. There were some who were jubilant. Sure. They had wanted it to happen. And they rejoiced. But now they didn't have to go to school. And they could keep other people from going to school who really wanted an education. But those were few in number. There were other students who were so stunned they didn't know whether to leave or not. Going down the hall, I found students crying. I found seniors who were bitter because they felt that they might not be able to graduate. Of course, tension had been high, and you can imagine the reaction, the various reactions. after the students left, the faculty didn't want to leave. Somehow we just couldn't leave. We met together in the faculty room, and we felt defeated. We felt as if we'd waved the flag of surrender, and we didn't want to wave a flag of surrender. We didn't want to admit that we couldn't control the situation. It was not until the acquittal of Casper in our local criminal court and the organization of the youth council that we began to have a breakdown within the school. The members of the youth council were not all students, but among those who were students, we had some habitual troublemakers, disciplinary problems, students who found it difficult to pass, and some of the students who belonged to the youth council were so ashamed of the fact that they had to belong that they refused to wear their badges. They had only joined at the insistence of their parents. They refused to participate in any of the troublemakers. I know because I talked with them. There are a few students who have been so sensitive to this situation, to the things that they've heard on or seen on the outside, that they have drawn within themselves. And they're not the same as they used to be. They're afraid to express themselves. And they've lost that happy, carefree attitude of youth. Of course, we hope that time will heal that and they will be once more their happy selves. Now, I don't think anybody can say enough concerning the courage of the Negro students themselves, who were willing to face persecution in their hometown to get an education. The majority of students, and I do mean the majority, have undergone this crisis with great courage and faced it intelligently, trying to be courteous and helpful at all times. And I think these students have grown up a little bit as a result of it.
That Sunday, with the school still closed and the FBI still in town, Reverend Turner faced his all-white congregation for the first time since his controversial act.
The Bible is without precedent as a book, and I personally have no fear that it will ever be superseded. But many have tried to misuse the Bible, trying to justify some low standard of conduct by the very Bible that they profess to love and by the book that never compromises with sin, with pride, with prejudice, or with hate. Billy Graham tells the following story. Shortly after the Civil War, in a very fashionable church in Richmond, Virginia, there entered a Negro man one Sunday morning when communion was being served. He walked down the aisle and took his place at the altar to partake of the elements of the Lord's Supper. There was a rustle of anger that swept through the congregation. Sensing this delicate situation, a distinguished gentleman stood up, and walking down the aisle, he took his place by his colored brother. Immediately, his magnificent example swept over the spirits of the rest of the people in that congregation, and they followed him to the altar, taking their place there too. This man was none other than Robert E. Lee. My friends, we have been too far away from God. When mobs are able in our land to flout the law, the tragic result is a Cicero, Illinois, or a Phoenix City, Alabama. Here in Clinton, we are not especially against integration. We are not especially against segregation. But we are positively and definitely against the disintegration of our community and our body politic that we cherish above all things, realizing that where anarchy prevails, none of us has anything of any value and none of us has any freedoms. anymore. And now we realize more clearly than ever before that it is Christ or chaos. May we pray.
All right, I think we'll go ahead and end it there. I think that is a pretty good overview of how this was forced through, though. I think that gives you a pretty good idea. I mean, we've done other things on forced integration before and how that was done through the school systems, how that sort of normalized it, how that brought it about as an everyday thing that had to be accepted, all of this. We've covered all this before. This is not new to this channel, but I think it's a little more specific. I don't think we ever talked about this specific element of it before, but it's kind of interesting to see the dynamics, the back and forth going on there between them. So anyway, I think that's the show. Let me do some quick thank yous here. Dux Führer, Bob Davis, Renuna Kate, Miss Renuna Kate, and this thing. Bushmaster 6A, Alter Lawn. I feel like there's something else. This thing doesn't show non-messages. It just shows the messages. It always gets me. I might remove the, like, quick dono thing, because it makes it so I can't see if somebody just does that and they don't send any message. Maybe it doesn't matter, I guess. Maybe they don't even care, but okay, that's it. Dux Führer and Bob Davis, Runicate, Altered Lawn, and Bushmaster 6A. Big shout out to you. We'll see you all on, probably not tomorrow, maybe tomorrow early with Dr. D. Maybe not. That's not on an automatic schedule, so we'll see. Possibly. Casper Deep Dive would be good if I could find him. It probably won't be very hard to find media on him. Probably very hard to find media on him, but so we'll see. Maybe we'll get one in the afternoon with Dr. D. Maybe not. Dr. Duke, we'll either get one with him or not. I don't know. I'm not counting on it, so I don't know. We'll see. What's the other thing? We'll definitely be back on Friday, though. We might even do some pop-up streams here and there, and I'm trying to decide, do we do one on Saturday or Sunday? I'm going to pick one of those days. Usually it's Sunday, but I might switch it out to Saturday. We did Saturday last week. That was interesting. If I do it on Saturday, I want to try to figure out some other kind of fun thing to do that's not just the usual kind of content. Something different. All right. With that, we'll see you later. We will see you later. Good night. Good night, everybody. Good night. Go check out Stack there.
Truth can break a foundation.